Hello and welcome to the BAM Deep Dives, a podcast series by the Belgian Association of Marketing. I'm Sarah from Imakina, an EPAM company, and I invite experts to come have a chat about some very hot topics in marketing. In each episode, I make them dig deep so they give us practical insights and real-world examples. Today, I'm recording from the BAM Marketing Congress, and I'll be talking with Thomas Eriksson, a behavioral expert from Sweden who coaches people to become the best leaders on the planet. He's also a best-selling author. He wrote the book series Surrounded by idiots, surrounded by psychopaths, surrounded by vampires. And he's the reason everyone knows the behavioral model with four colors, red, green, yellow, and blue. I hope you're ready. Let's get started. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you.
What are your four colors? Which of the four are you?
Oh, that's a straightforward question. That's yes. Quite personal. Wouldn't you say? Well, my colors are, I have a lot of red and then I have equally much blue, which makes me a very task-oriented person. But I also have quite a lot yellow. I have no green whatsoever. I'm terribly sorry. I blame that on my mother's side. They took all the green there.
Your mother took all the green?
The whole part of her family took all the... Everyone is green there. I have no green. Mm. I can turn it on if I have to.
Oh, that's
but
quite
it's,
a skill.
It's you. Well, that's what I do for a living.
Yes.
I should know this.
And is that what you teach other people as well to do?
Exactly, because, you know, people are different. Haha, big surprise. But instead of feeling surrounded by idiots, you can actually try to, you know, adapt into a certain situation, adapt into people's... If you read someone and you realize I have to speed up or I have to slow down, maybe, depends. So of course, you can tap into the other person on the other side of the table. As we are doing right now, you and I. People who listen to this can't see this, but of course we are. We are adapting to each other in a way to make it, we're pacing each other to make it work, to make it a decent and nice and interesting conversation. But if you have a system, if you do it properly and you do it correctly instead of just guessing, it's going to be so much better. That's how I like to see it.
Speaking of the system, it's the four colors. For people who haven't read your book or, you know, who haven't really dived into any of the behavioral sciences.
Right.
Could you give a quick introduction of what the four colors are?
It's the famous old disc profile dressed in colors because for a pedagogical reason, it's easy to remember a red and yellow behavior type instead of a high D over an I with a low C or an
yes.
ENTJ personality if you prefer MBTI or, sorry, INTJ or is it ITPK? Well, anyways, red and yellow, it's easier. So you have these two axes. You have extroversion versus introversion, task orientation versus people orientation. So you get these four basic types, let's say, which obviously can be mixed in numerous ways. Algorithmically speaking, you can mix them in 19,462, I think it is.
Oh, wow.
So some people say there's got to be more than four types of people, of course. But like when you bake a cake, you have egg, milk, sugar, and so on. You don't have, you know, you don't have an infinite number of ingredients, but you have some of them. When you mix them, you get a different cake. More sugar gives you a different taste, less sugar, you know, and so on. Mm. Same thing here.
And how does knowing about these four colors make you a better leader?
It's about communication. Good leaders are excellent communicators. That is for sure. This has been... proved over and over and over. And the thing is, in order to be an excellent communicator, you need to have social competence or people skills, which also is based on self-awareness. The best leaders are very self-aware. They understand who they are. They understand what we see when they enter the room, how we perceive them. When they stand up in front of the team and say, okay, we're going to go in this direction or in that direction. They know how people are experiencing their way of communicating. So the more you know about you, the easier it is to learn about other people as well, I would say. It's like, you know, connecting two dots on a map. If I came here to Brussels using an airplane, probably, which mm-hmm. I did, mm-hmm. and let's say I called my travel agency up, mm-hmm. and I said, give me a ticket to Brussels. And they would say, no problem. And then they will ask me, from where would you like to go? Just imagine, I said, never mind that. Just get me the ticket. How will they solve this? Answer, they won't. Because you need two dots to connect them on the map. Mm-hmm. So in my case, Stockholm in Sweden was the starting point. In a conversation between two people, that would have been me. But if I don't know where I am, how will I get myself to Brussels? I won't. So I need to know where I am, and that's the self-awareness part. And good leaders know where they are. That's just, and I've seen it over and over and over. That is usually what I work on when I mentor high CEOs and entrepreneurs and founders or big corporations. They need to understand who they are and why they are there in the first place. Some do and some don't, actually, which is interesting.
I would like to jump on that because I've met quite a few people who say, I know who I am, and then they do things, and then I think, no, you don't really know who you are.
So if they do know who they are, why did you act in that stupid
exactly,
way?
Exactly, yes.
You just messed it up. There has been a lot of studies on self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting study made by an American psychologist, I think she is, Tasha Urish, I think it's pronounced. She gave an excellent TED talk on this some 10 years ago. Really can recommend it. And she said she asked 3,000 people about their self-awareness. Turns out 95% rate themselves above average, which is interesting mathematically. Mm-hmm. I can say that again, 95% rate themselves above average. It's like asking men, are you a good driver? We're all good drivers. We're all above average. Of course we are. Everyone is better than everyone. So, no, but seriously, self-awareness. And then they did a 360 analysis. Turns out 10, maybe 15%. So there's a huge, potential, let's call it.
So then if you want to be a leader and you want to work on your self-awareness and you accept that you probably don't know yourself as well as you think you do, what would you recommend?
The first is to define what is the goal. Well, no, the first you have to do is to decide, yes, I want to jump on this journey because it's part of a sort of a journey, you could say. Probably you need a couple of problems. You need to understand that there are some problems on the way, some challenges to deal with, because most people, you can't change somebody else. That's impossible. But you can change yourself if you want to. But most people don't want to do that because they think everything is just, you know, hanky-dory. But you have to understand. So what I usually do is I give people problems. I tell them, if you coach your top management team like this, what's going to happen? And I sort of push them into a corner where they realize I'm going to lose half the team if I continue on this path. And then I say, okay, would you like to work on you and how you approach them? And would you like to know how to talk to people individually instead of just treating everyone the same way? And then they usually say, okay, that might be a good idea. Because it's costly, you know. You can lose really, really important and good people by mistreating them. And people, doesn't really matter if you are the CEO of a company or if you're just a teller at a bank office. Everyone would like to be treated the way they want to be treated. I'm not saying you have to follow everyone's ideas all the time. I'm not saying that. But you have to pace them at least. You have to find a balance and sort of reach them and sort of build something, some probably like trust together. Because if you don't do that, they will feel bad. And people who feel bad about you, they won't help you in the future. People don't necessarily remember what you told them, but they will remember how you made them feel. That's super important. That's a human behavioral trait. That's just who we are. So that's important. And I don't believe in this idea that you the higher up in hierarchy, the more BS you have to be tolerant about, or the more... The less positive feedback you need or something. People aren't machines. The only people who don't need, you know, the positive vibe are narcissists or maybe psychopaths. We have them as well. Mm-hmm. And happily enough, they're not in majority. Knock on wood. No, they're not.
But how do you coach a CEO? Is it very different from coaching someone much lower on the ladder?
No. People are people. The good thing about CEOs and entrepreneurs who have achieved things, it's easier to coach them because they have left the cliché position in their lives. You know, when you talk to, okay, this is going to sound a bit, I don't want to come across as being rude or offensive. However, middle management are more stuck in these cliché-like things. They have all this saying, these, you know, contemporary phrases, you know, like... Well, I can't come up with anyone right now. But when you reach a certain level, you just cut the crap. You skip the BS because you don't have time to say all the lovely things and to walk around in circles. And you have left sort of the management consultant thing behind you. So it's really easy to talk to these people. And obviously, the higher up in the hierarchy that you reach, the more people who have the color red you will meet. And they don't have time for any BS at all. Give it to me immediately, bam, bam, straightforward, and tell me what is, seems to be the problem here. And I do that. I talk to them like, you know, like to my neighbor. I don't wrap anything in anymore. I made a number of expensive mistakes historically with these people thinking you need to, you know, present yourself in a certain way. They see through you. That's why they are at the top. They are really good people, usually. Yeah.
They are good people, but are they also good leaders?
No, not necessarily. They might be effective and efficient, but good leadership is quite rare. I would say when it comes to 10%.
Oof.
I would say of all managers I have met, and that's thousands and thousands of managers throughout my career as a consultant, training leaders training managers in leadership procedures and so on. I would say 10% of people that I have met are good leaders, really good leaders, powerful leaders, inspiring and motivational and all of that. Good listeners, and they have emotional intelligence, they have it all, you know, and they are very self-aware. But only 10%. Then you have, I would say, 70% managers who are more like, yeah, we can keep them, but, you know, they're maybe not be world-class anything. But at least they're not hurting people deliberately. Then you have 20% at the bottom who are so bad, they should be kicked out and buried under the building. Don't allow them into the house anymore because these people are bad. These are the narcissists, the bullies, the jerks, you know, all the bad people, the energy vampires, let's say.
That's your vampire book.
That's my vampire book, exactly. Drama queens and, you know, control freaks and micromanagers and all of these people. And they cannot be taught anything because they don't want to learn anything. They think they have it down, but they don't. These people should be kicked out and never to be seen again. I mean this. It sounds dramatic, but it is the truth. Kick them out.
Well, if they're your manager, it's kind of hard to kick them out, right? So how do you deal with a vampire?
Well, if you have a person who's stealing your energy constantly, you have to, you know, just skip it, just change job. It doesn't really matter. Oh, it's my dream job. I can't leave. No, it's not your dream job. If your manager is a bully, this is not your dream position. Find a better position. If you're good at what you do, you will find a better job. People who leave a company use it every second time they leave a company, they do it because of bad management. One out of two leaves because of their closest manager. That is the case.
That's a hard statistic.
It's true. What can I tell you? Good leadership is rare. As I said, 10%. And some people are, you know, just, I don't know, average. So you can live with them, you can survive them, you sort of just, but you just exist, you know, trying to keep away from their, you know, their nasty looks or something. But no, shouldn't joke about these things. But good leadership is rare, and that's very unfortunate.
Is it trainable? If you're not very good as a leader, is that a trainable skill, or are you just born a good leader?
You know, that's, of course, the right question, Sarah. The thing is this. There are a lot of people saying, oh, you could be anything. Anyone could be a good sales guy or a saleswoman, or anyone could be a great leader. No, they can't. That's actually not true one bit. That is just a myth. Everyone can get better if they train and practice and work hard, but not everyone will be good at everything. That is just a stupid way of looking at it. You know, when I was a young man, I wanted to be a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
And you've seen me live here, and you could really understand why I didn't succeed very well there. I'm too short, right?
Too short, yes.
Too short. 183, everyone was like 2 decimeters taller than I. So I couldn't. Then I wanted to drive Formula One cars.
Mm-hmm.
Too tall. Didn't fit into the cabin.
Really?
Life has treated me very, very unfair.
Unfairly. misfortunes.
I had to find an occupation where my height didn't matter. Writing books,
mm-hmm.
giving keynote talks, mm-hmm. you know, these kind of things. But it's just the way it is. Life is sometimes cruel to you, but I can't do everything. And everyone cannot be a great leader. Most people can be better, but as we started this conversation, it starts with you wanting to do it. You have to have a reason, because changing yourself and your actions are usually, it can be quite painful, really. changing who you are and changing how you are acting. And you should never violate your personality. So this is a bit of a, this is quite problematic, because people say, well, I have to change myself, I have to do this, I have to be more extrovert or more people-oriented or whatever. But then you're violating who you really are. I would say find an occupation, find a position in life where you don't have to tweak yourself too much. Like people forcing themselves on getting up on a big stage and speaking in front of people. We know, this is evidence-based data, the worst thing in life is to speak in front of other people. We know this as a fact. This has been proven over and over and over again. And still some people are forced to do it. You can learn how to do it better and not being completely frightened about the situation. But should you really push yourself in directions where it feels really, really bad? Are you sure about this? I'm not so sure. I'm more of the guy that says, well, you can try it out. If it doesn't work, do something else, because there's more than one job in this world. And if you're a lousy leader and you know it, then why are you staying? The problem is, of course, most of the lousy leaders don't know they're lousy. They think they are, you know, super, super good role models, but they're just, some of them are just completely useless. Totally useless.
I notice
when it comes to leadership.
Yes, I noticed that you use the word leader and leadership very consistently, and you never say something like boss or manager. That's on purpose, I assume.
Well, that's on purpose. But of course, the 20% at the bottom, they are bosses. They are just cruel people. But, you know, leaders are what we are working on here. Leaders are what we are striving for. We need leaders. We really don't need managers or bosses or you know. We need leaders. People who will sort of walk in the front, who can talk to talk and walk to walk. We need good role models, and we have too few of those. That is absolutely. And you can also, of course, lead people just over the cliff. That has been happening all over and over and over again throughout history. Good leaders. I mean, there has been tyrannical leaders per se who make people do nasty things. That's also a form of leadership, but it's very, very bad for humanity, let's say.
But then what exactly is the difference between being a leader and being a boss?
Well, a boss is a position, boss slash manager. That's the position. That's your square, your box in the organizational chart, you know. That's you. You are managing people or bossing people. Kind of the same thing, maybe. But leaders, that's what you do. That's how you are acting. Leadership is a communication process. You know, you talk about informal leaders because you have someone who is sort of playing the game much better. They are good role models, but they might be, a bit to the side. It could be one of your peers, maybe. But you never talk about informal managers, because you have a manager. That is the position. Leadership is about how you act, how you behave, how you inspire people, how you deal with complicated solutions, how you give people positive feedback or how you give people negative feedback, how you actually criticize someone and make them say thank you. That's a tricky balance, really. But leaders can do that. And you can find those people everywhere. Not necessarily in the managing position, actually. Make sense?
Yes. But now I'm wondering, how do you give someone criticism and then make them say thank you and mean it?
That's easy. If you mean it, if you do it, because there's an old saying, you know, if you leave the restaurant with something between your teeth, you know, something is sticking out, doesn't look really good. Mm-hmm. Your friend will tell you, I think there's something between your teeth. You should take it off, you know, take it out. Doesn't look good. Other people will just see it and they just let you leave the restaurant and make a fool out of yourself. If you, you know, I'm, you know, putting my hand on my chest here, if you sincerely mean good with people, if you want them to be better, they will feel it. If you say, you're a stupid idiot, you're so lousy, if you don't shape up here, I'm going to kick you out, you know, you're just a complete joke. But if you say, I want you to proceed in this, I want you to be the best version of you, and you do this good, and that's great. However, there are a couple of things that could be adjusted. Can we have a conversation about it? Most people say, sure, fine, I'm happy. I'm happy receiver of good, proper feedback. So you can say, when you do this, those people are going to get mad at you. Is that what you're aiming for? Oh, no, not at all. Okay, so how can we work through this in order to don't make that happen again? So if you do it properly, if you address people the right way, you can tell them they are at the bottom of the pile, really. But you can help them, you know, work themselves upwards. But you have to have a system. That's how I coach people. And sometimes they hate me for it, saying, I know it's true, I don't like to hear it, but thank you anyways, you know. Sometimes that's just, you know, tough love. Like when you raise kids, sometimes you just have to adjust their actions. You just have to. Otherwise, they're going to be completely mean and cruel to everybody else. We can't have that. People are going to hate them for it. Mm. We don't want that. So because we love them, we have to criticize them sometimes and also give them promotion and positive feedback. Obviously, we have to, you know, stroke them, you know, and tap them on the backs and say, you're good, I love you very much. However, take the cap off at the dinner table, you know, just take the hat off. What is this? No phones at the table. Put it away, you know. Yeah, but you know, my friend almost texted me. Doesn't matter. We have a rule in this house. Leave it outside, you know. Because you love that. You want them to be good, human, decent people, right?
Your coaching sounds a lot like, your leadership sounds a lot like coaching. Do you need good coaching skills to be a leader?
It helps. I think, I mean, there are so many ways of looking at this. You know, it doesn't really matter what you call it. Call it coaching, call it leadership. Coaching is one of the leadership skills that you sure could work on, of course. But also instructing people is a coaching skill. And giving feedback is a coaching skill. But it's also a leadership skill. Instructions, giving instructions, pointing with your full hand might be a leadership skill. It might not be a coaching skill. Coaching is more like, you know, building on what is on the other side of the table. There's so many cliches moving around here. So you can, and some always say, no, you know, coaching is something completely different. He's wrong. Well, whatever. Doesn't really matter. What you are aiming for is to make your people better than they were before you entered the room. And what happens is not, the important stuff isn't what happens when you are there, but what happens when you are not there. If you have done the right, proper leadership and coaching and all of that, they will continue to striving forward when you are traveling the world or, you know, getting a cold or taking a Christmas leave. That's what counts. Are they doing the best they can when you are not in the room?
Mm. Coaching skills we touched on, but at the beginning of the conversation, you also said that good leaders are also good communicators. Do you want to expand on the communication part?
It's all connected. It's all connected. Leadership is a communication process.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, if you can't communicate, you can't lead.
But what does it mean to communicate? Everybody can speak.
Yes, but can you make them listen? And can you listen to them? Is it a one-way communication? You can send text messages, like this famous guy who is now you know, being spread on LinkedIn, I saw this week, who kicked, 90% of the staff members. Was it in an email? You didn't show up at a meeting, so you're out. Is this just a storytelling or is it for real? Well, who knows? I didn't check it up. But if you do that, that's a one-way communication. I would say that out of 100 people who got sacked that morning, a couple of them probably would have a reason for not attending the meeting. And by the way, why didn't they attend? How could he miss all these people? Why didn't they pay attention to the original invitation? Why didn't they occur in the meeting? Some did, most didn't. Something was done wrong here. That was not good leadership, obviously. But that's not, also, it's not a two-way communication. It's just a one-way street. Communication happens on the receiver's terms. People hear what they hear and they see what they see. And when your message is filtered through layers of, you know, experiences, years, education, life, attitudes, opinions, biases, prejudice, what comes out is not what you put in there. And if you don't pay attention to what is in there in each and every individual, because you can't even coach a team. I'm the team's coach. Well, maybe, but you are the team member's coach or leader, if you prefer, or manager. The title doesn't really matter. That's not the point. The point is how you're acting towards your people. And you can't coach a group of people. You have to coach individuals. That's the main mistake, I would say. Hey, group, okay, there's 12 people in here. I'm going to inspire you. Well, there's 12 pairs of ears in here. You know, I can talk about this for quite some time, as you might notice, so I'm not going to bore you with all the details. But still, what was the question? Communication, leadership, coaching.
Yes.
They're all interconnected. That's just the way it is. But it starts with self-awareness and communication skills. If you know what to do, that's fine. But if you don't know how to do it,
Do you have any tips for marketing people who are leading a team or who just want to develop their leadership skills because they're hoping to climb the ladder? What do we need to know?
I have a bit of a warning message for marketing team leaders, because marketing teams are usually super creative. These are the people who, you know, thinking outside the box. What do you mean? So there is a box. How do I get in the box? You know? Some people are so creative. They haven't touched ground since, I don't know, 2011 or something. But, you know, so these people are free rollers. You know, these are, you know, free spirits and you know, happy, shiny people. And coaching them is really, really hard sometimes, because they don't like to take orders. Because they think they have it down. They think they have everything, you know, in order. But they don't find their papers, and they don't remember where they put their notes. And they don't write things down. And they just create and make usually great stuff. They come up with ideas you and I wouldn't dream of in a million years. They just turn things upside down. Oh, there it is. And you would say, wow, fantastic. On the other hand, how did you do it? I don't know. And coaching these types of people might be a bit of a challenge. You need patience. And you need to build this on trust and individual trust. You need to build personal relationships with each and every one of them. You have to really pay attention to the individual here, because these people are quite individualistic, I would say. Sometimes big egos also.
How do you handle a big ego in your marketing team?
You pay attention.
What do you mean you pay attention? Well,
you pay attention to what happens. And you obviously you don't let their big egos challenge your own big ego, because maybe you are the best marketeer in the team. So you might be a little bit like this yourself. It could happen. So there you might have a bit of a conundrum how to deal with a lot of big egos in the same room. That could be quite conflicting. But if you pay attention, if you let people speak and talk and sort of spill it out, and then just adjust, okay, a lot of great ideas, Thomas, fantastic. Now, let's chisel out what is actually possible to do in reality. Let's bring reality into the scheme here. So you just have to. And they say, no, but I have this fancy idea. We could do this, we could do that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, so write it 3 bullet points. Email them to me and see if they can actually put it on a piece of paper. Some can and some actually cannot.
And then you coach them.
And you have to coach them. Mm. I mean, of course, they're skilled. They are on your team because they know stuff. And sometimes you just you need to give them some freedoms, obviously. You can't, if you're giving people total freedom about their own, let's say, their own agenda, or their own ideas, or their own, how they deal with work, you know, just on a weekly basis. You say, you do whatever. And then you realize, oh, this isn't working at all. This is just a complete chaos. Then you sort of, you know, take it back. So you sort of restrict the freedoms. People are going to hate you for it. You have to start the other way around. You have to be a bit strict in the beginning. And then you can loosen up a little bit, because, you know, that's better than to be super, super just tolerant and everything. And then, you know, pull them back in. They're going to hate you, completely hate you for it.
So start with a small box and then gradually make the box bigger.
Exactly, so that's the right way to do it.
Okay. Well, so far we've talked about leadership, which requires a skill of self-awareness and communication and coaching skills, especially, you know, in marketing environments where creativity is a really important skill. But what we haven't talked about is resilience, because it's been quite hard the last 2 years for marketing teams. Budgets have been cut down. Lots of people have been let go. And I know that you have a book on dealing with both when bad things happen, right?
Yes, Surrounded by Setbacks is actually one of my, maybe the favorite of my own books. It's very personal, and it's a lot about how to deal with, well, we all run into roadblocks from time to time. It's just impossible. I'm on the same page as, if you know him, there's an American author called Mark Manson. The Salad of Not Giving a F, you know. And he says, you have to accept life as it is. Sure, work hard and you know, aim for success and everything, but you have to accept it, that you won't succeed everywhere. You just won't. No, but seriously, resilience is good. I think the human psyche is like the human body in a way. The more you push it, in a like when you're building muscles in the gym, you know, if you can lift 10 kilos doing bicep curls, let's say you take a, you know, what's it called, a barbell,
dumbbell, yeah.
Dumbbell, thank you, a dumbbell of 10 kilos, you can do like 10 reps, let's say. Then in a week you can do like 11 and 12 because you're getting stronger, because you tear it up a little bit and you actually hurt the muscle a little bit. I think the psyche is a little bit like that. You can actually build resilience and make yourself more powerful and stronger if you sort of torture yourself a little bit, not completely traumatize yourself by doing stuff that might risk your life or things. But if you... We can see this is a bit of the generational gap, I would say. If you overprotect kids today, they are not prepared for the world when they grow up. That's why you need all these safe spaces in the universities and stuff, because they are not used to, you know, hard times, because we have overprotected them. And by we, I mean we, my generation, we are probably to blame. You know, I'm a Gen X, which is make me sort of a dinosaur. It's like something from, you know, a galaxy far, far away or something. I don't know. No, but seriously, if you don't let them get hurt a little bit, I'm saying a little bit at a time, sort of testing their resilience a little bit and build it up, that's not going to work, because one day you will be gone and there they are, left in the world with no protection, no shield at all, and that's bad. And I think the same goes for human beings who are struggling when it comes to their career or building a business or being an entrepreneur or dealing with an unhappy marriage or whatever. You have to accept it's going to hurt sometimes. Life isn't perfect. It's going to hurt you and you have to just get back up again. There is no one's there to help you. No one's going to protect you from everything. You can't hide away in the corner. You just have to do it because it is what it is. But you can train yourself, I would say.
How do you train yourself? How do you train resilience? Because when stuff happens, you react to it.
Change
How do
parents.
You train that?
No, don't do that. Cut that one out. No, but seriously, again, if you are doing things that isn't working for you, acknowledge them as maybe not a failure, but at least a setback. Or you define, oh, this is a roadblock, I can't get around it. Well, try something else. But learn from every mistake. If you mess it up, an example, I got my first managing position at the age of 24 in a Swedish bank. I thought I would be a fantastic leader. I messed it up so badly. You cannot imagine, Sarah. This was
what happened?
So painful. Oh, it's a long story. I didn't know anything about it. I was a good sales rep. Mm. So I sold myself to them. I said, take me, I can do this. And for some silly reason, they listened to me. They shouldn't have done that.
You were a great communicator.
I was, but I was a lousy leader because I thought, you know, selling, leading, what is it? They are actually connected, but it's a different job, you know, it's a different job, really. So, and that hurt a lot. It hurt a lot. Mostly, it hurt my team and then it hurt me. But I learned. I got feedback from the HR department, called me and said, we would like to have a chat with you. Could we? Ooh. Is that possible? I said, well,
please step into my office.
Please, yes, and close the door behind you. No, it was a horrible. You know, when you leave your job, you sit around the coffee table, you know, someone gives you a present and they wish you the best of luck in your future step, in your next part of your career and blah, blah, blah. They didn't give me anything. I gave them a plant and said, I'm sorry. Basically, I'm terribly sorry, I messed it up. One lady felt so bad for me in this awkward, silent meeting. She said, at the end, after some 20 minutes, she said, well, it got a little bit better at the end, at least. Oh, it was so horrible, horrible, horrible. But I learned from it. I did get up. I did get back up in the saddle again. After a year, I tried again and did much better because I observed my own missteps and my miscommunication and my misconception of the whole thing. I'm a boss here, you know. I'm a big shot here. Well, I wasn't in a local bank, you know, leading 13 people. This is not sort of conquering the world, really. But it felt like it, so I messed it up. But I learned. It hurt, but I learned. I still carry those wounds with me, actually, in a way. I still remember what I did, specifically certain couple of things that I did wrong. Not listening to people, really not paying attention, not using the green bar, which I don't have one. But we started this conversation, I can turn it on now, but I couldn't then. So when people came to me with problems, I just, no, I don't want to listen to this. I'm busy. You just fix it yourself. You know, that's not good leadership. That's just, you know, I don't know what it is. It's bad behavior, bad manners. But by accepting I messed it up, by accepting my, that was a failure, that was really a failure. By accepting it, I built some resilience, I would say. So when I tried a couple of years later, 1 year and a half maybe, 18 months later, doesn't matter now, does it?
No.
Why do we do that? Correcting yourself all the time. No, but it helps. And if I didn't, if I hadn't failed then, I would have failed later on instead. So the quicker you failed, really, the quicker you learn how to do it the right way. Like, my wife is my third wife. And people look at me and say, oh, I'm so sorry. I used to say, no, why? Don't be. I know everything that doesn't work. I've tested it all. It didn't work. Now I'm on the right path because we are a power couple. She is superb in every way because I am much, much better. I'm a better man. I'm a better husband. But if I hadn't failed twice, I don't know how I would have been treating her when we met quite late in life. That's another example of building resilience and learning from, you know, crashed relationships, crashed marriages. Hurtful, painful, oh yes, but very, very useful, if you know how to look at it.
And if you are willing to learn, which I think is also, if I understand your explanation correctly, also a great skill of a great leader, is someone who's willing to learn even when it hurts.
Absolutely. You have to adapt to a new situation. You have to realize, you have to view yourself in the mirror more often and just understand you are not perfect. You're on the right path, good, keep on going, but still, you have a long way to go. We have to accept it. Narcissistic leaders, they don't see that. They think they are already some superhumans. You know, bow by my feet because I am the one. No, you're not. You're actually quite a problem. That's what you are.
Yes.
So we see that a lot, actually, unfortunately.
And so it means learning, not just from your failures, but also about yourself, which is a self-awareness, and about your team as well. So I think an interest in behavioral sciences should also be a part of the skill set of a great leader.
Understanding behaviors will always be very, very useful. That is the case. You don't have to study to, you know, 5 years in psychology. You don't have to do that. But just understanding basic behavioral patterns is super useful. It is, actually. If you use, well, the tools that I am using, the DISC profile, and I have an add-on of that one, which is called the workplace motivators, meaning you understand the drivers, you understand people's motivation, why they are here, why they are acting the way they do. If you combine those two assessments, you're going to solve 90% of every issue that will end up on your desk, instead of just guessing your way through your whole career, which is quite painful. Use a system. Find a system that you like, that you find useful, and use it.
You've looked at human behavior from quite a few angles because, you know, they're reflected in your books. Looking forward to 2025, is there anything in the world of behavioral science that makes you enthusiastic, that gets your heartbeat going?
Oh, wow. I have a list of, I would say, 25, 27 possible future, maybe, to do projects, I don't know. And I'm picking from them. I released, the latest book was called Surrounded by Liars. It's called Surrounded by Liars. It was released in English just a couple of months ago, I believe. It's going to come in French as well. And in Dutch, it's already published in Dutch, really. Or Flemish, if you prefer. In writing, it's the same, I think. I hope I don't got that wrong. But that was on my list for some years, before the pandemic. And I really couldn't find the nerve until I sort of dug into it. And then it became more and more interesting. So that's usually how it goes. I have a long list again, but I'm not sure where I'm going. Well, I know a little bit, but I can't tell you what the number one next project is. I really can't talk about that already because then my agents will shoot me. Probably, because I just can't. But I'm looking into a number. It's like, you know, I have a shortlist things, three things, and then I, you know, dig into them a little bit and see how does it feel. Because if I don't find energy and interest in a certain topic, I'm not going to do it. Because people say, oh, write about AI. Well, no, I'm not going to write about artificial intelligence. I'm completely confused by human behavior still. So, you know, add on top of that AI, other people will do that much better than I. So I will never touch that, I think. knock on wood. So that's one that I won't do, even though people say I should, because, you know, living in the world with AI and how will this affect the human mind and all of that. Well, nobody knows, really. Nobody knows. So I understand. I'm not answering your question. I hear that. I'm sort of talking around the whole issue. Mm. But I don't know. There are so many things going on. I'm fascinated by the fact that young people are leaving social media more and more. A lot of young people are actually starting to read physical books. I have seen interesting reports when it comes to this infamous Gen Z debacle, containing people up until born 2010, which makes them 14 years of age. And people say, we have to plan for the future. Well, you can't plan based on how a teenager is acting, because then you're going to find yourself in deep, deep trouble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's too early. And those things are interesting and fascinating, but I'm not sure what to do about it yet. But I'm sort of following the discussion, let's say.
I hear another book coming, Surrounded by Teenagers.
I had a plan. I had a plan. Yeah, that's on the list. And people say, "Oh, that's painful." I had a plan. I had for many years. I tested this with my American agent, and she said, "No, just no." And that was a book. It was supposed to be called "Surrounded." Are you ready for this? You have two children, you told me.
Yes.
Surrounded by bad parents.
Ooh, flipping exactly. It right around.
Ooh, that's not going to work. They said, just don't. I said, no, I'm not going to harass people and call them names. No, just don't. People will hate you. You have to, you know, move and find a secret address. You have to change your name. Just don't. It's not going to fly at all. So I'm kind of curious on that one. Because sometimes I have to prove them wrong, you know. I've done that a couple of times, actually. Both the Idiot book and the Psychopath book was my idea. Mm. And my publisher said no twice. So they said, don't go there. Surrounded by Idiots. Firstly, it's a stupid title. People are going to get angry. Secondly, it's an ugly cover. It's my own design. And thirdly, no one's interested in these colors. What are you talking about? No, scrap the whole idea. But I didn't.
And here we are today.
Here we are today, yeah, 10 million books later, and here we are.
And translated in 63 languages worldwide?
Yes, you did your homework. 63, it's completely surreal. I don't know how to wrap my head around it. It's crazy. But I'm happy, and I'm getting good feedback from all over the planet, really. People emailing me from, you know, India and New Zealand and Canada and Belgium, obviously, and Poland and Norway, and, you know, and the United States and everywhere. And they have the same notion. Yes, that's the way it is. Now I get it. Aha. My husband is like this and I am like that. Now I understand. So these aha moments sound exactly the same, regardless of where you are in the world. And also the oh no moments. Like, oh no, I usually do that. Oh, I do exactly like that. Oh, I have to stop. Oh no. Ooh, the pain, you know. It sounds the same in Malaysia or Singapore as in Greece. It's fascinating. That's fascinating. That is really, really cool. I didn't expect that. I was a bit naive. I thought people were more different. The culture differs, obviously. But when you sort of polish away the culture differences and you get beneath the surface and you realize people are people. A red person will always be a red person, regardless of where you find him or her, and a green and so on. That's really cool. It is. And good news for the world, that we are more similar than we are different. That is absolutely the case.
That's a lovely message to end on. I have a final question before we wrap things up. This is a podcast for marketeers. So do you have any tips for people in marketing specifically?
Don't listen to the latest report saying now everything is different. Don't fall for the new cool fancy stuff. When some of the big think tanks says, you know, your audience or your target groups are now completely different. Everything is turned upside down. Everyone asks for different things now. Don't trust them. That is not the case. It's just not true. The human brain has been the same for 70,000 years. The human mind doesn't change that fast. It is, if you ask someone 15 years younger than you, they will not be completely different. They might have different interests, yes. But don't think they are acting in a very different way, because that's not how it works. Humans are wired in a specific way. It's just the way it is. So don't fall for the new, don't fall for all the novelty that is in this business, actually. Just don't. Ask Jaguar. poor Jaguar. I was thinking, did they really mess it up? Did they kill the brand completely? Or is the guy behind it all, maybe he's a genius. The jury's out. Who knows?
Only time will tell.
I don't know. They were my favorite car brand, but I'm not sure anymore. That's just a personal preference, so don't listen to me on that.
Okay. So deep down, everyone is the same. Or is made of the same stuff.
Homo sapiens hasn't changed very much the last 10,000 years. That's true. Okay. The technology is changing, the world is changing, and of course we are adapting to things that are happening around us. But the human mind is not changing. That's a myth.
We'll remember that. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you.